previously.tv podcast network.
We have a hot racist, a even hotter black activist power person, a clergy,
what?
And we have a terrorist.
No.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 118 for the week of June 6th, 2016. I am Confederate flag bikini flaunter David T. Cole, and I'm here with Patagonian manhood ceremony Sarah D. Bunting.
Just a harpies.
Regrettable tandem tattoo Joe Reed.
Grandma, why does that say that on your wrist?
Puking producer Star Ariano.
That was amazing.
And balls tanner John Ramos.
I can sing, you know.
Hello. Welcome, everyone, to Extra Hot Great, especially to our guest, John Ramos. Hello, John.
Hello, everyone.
Yay! Welcome back. We are here to talk about the season 2 premiere of Unreal. This is a show that I covered last season and will cover this season on previously.tv. Very happy to do it, particularly since, once again, it coincides with an airing of a real slash fake slash real dating show that it's based on, The Bachelorette, which is heading into its third season at the same time that its third week as Unreal premieres. And yet a lot of stuff is happening on Unreal that has never happened on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, starting with the show has got a non-white chooser person at the center of it, which is something that we still have yet to see in reality. Let's talk about how this change has already affected the show. John, as our guest, why don't you start? What do you think of Darius?
As a character so far, definitely interesting. I mean, the football, making him an NFL star is like, I feel like the show didn't exactly solve gender relations. Now it's throwing in race relations and the and the complexity of, you know, a sports star in here. So it's a lot. So far, it's kind of crazy. But I think Darius, as the Bachelor, is navigating, you know, the first couple of episodes interestingly and well. So the show is so crazy. I mean, I don't even want to speculate on where it could go. but so far I'm totally hooked, even if it is like very messy. And I, you know, it's almost like Breaking Bad levels of like, what are the problems going to be and how are they going to end up digging themselves out of it?
Well, right in the premiere, we already saw one of them, and Sarah alluded to this in her intro as the Patagonian manhood ceremony, the return of Chet, slimmed down, and with a new dose of MRA bullshit and his way of trying to reclaim what he is calling his kingdom, even though we all know if we watch season one, it never really was, is to try and claim it on gender grounds and then to go behind Quinn's back when she doesn't let him do that by essentially kidnapping Darius. Sarah, since you had Chet as your intro thing, what were your thoughts on this storyline in the premiere?
I loved, all right, first of all, going back a second, when we covered this the last time on Extra Hot Great, I watched the first few episodes and then didn't get around to watching the rest of season one until Saturday. I could not stop watching it. It is my new favorite thing.
It's like, so good.
I think it may have replaced creamsicles. It's so good. but there are a couple of things that are back for season two that I'm not excited to see back, even though I liked one of them very much in his season one iteration, and that one is, the other one is Jeremy. Fuck Jeremy. We'll get to that.
Seriously.
The first one is Chet. I love Bierko always. I loved Bierko in this role. I think they might have been better off like saving him for later in the season, maybe. There's something about him coming back that feels a little bit like that awkward only on TV conservation of characters thing. I trust the show to figure it out, but there is something fascinating about this character that for all of his like id stupidity and like just clueless selfishness. There is something in about his like lizard brain understanding of how like the shitty ways that TV works, that he understands them and has absolutely no illusions about them, mostly because he can benefit from it. That is really fascinating for me to watch him interacting with the characters who we relate to more because they are like more hopeful and less privileged. So on paper, I'm not thrilled that he's back, but we'll see.
Was that thing for real? Like this whole
the
you know,
activity
primal
that he participated
man
in?
Shit. Does that like track with the character? Because that seems so cartoonish.
Do you mean it's is it real? Like, is that a thing that
I know
happens?
It's a thing.
Oh,
I meant in the context of the show, is this like something that he believes in truly? And is he that kind of guy?
I bought it for him. Okay. He seems like someone who would be looking for some kind of outside approval context for his shittiness. Yeah. Uh-huh. And this gives him cover if he can say, like, I went through this, I'm just reclaiming, I'm supposed to, I made you play the male role and now I'm taking it back. Like, you know, you're that's not what's happening. You're just trying to unseat her from her authority.
It felt like a storyline written 6 years ago.
Well, maybe. Or 26 years ago from Iron John days. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like the MRA stuff feels all too current in a way, and that for a character who got kind of ousted by these two women to sort of turn that personal defeat into this global issue of like, well, the real problem is that men and women don't, you know, aren't taking up their, you know, prescribed gender roles, and that's why society is falling apart, and that's why I lost my job, which I think would have felt more effective to me if I was sort of disappointed by how quickly the show got things back to last season status quo in terms of the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. And I don't expect that to necessarily stick around, especially where things get shaken up at the end of episode 2. But it was a little bit of a bummer that just like at the very beginning, they're just like new power structure. Rachel's this, Quinn's that. And then it's just like, oh yeah, except for we want to get it back to that traditional power structure of Quinn and Rachel with Chet complicating it, at least for the bulk of that first two episodes, which, you know, it's six of one, half dozen of another. It still was, you know, led to some really good stuff, but I'd like to see them. I would have liked to have seen them run with Rachel in the Quinn seat for a little bit longer.
Let's go back to one of the things that Sarah brought up. Sorry, John, did you have more to add? Sorry about that.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, unfortunately, a lot of times in Hollywood, as we all know, I think, like, you get a project set up, you're on top of the world, and then the network executive is in your corner, gets fired, and everything changes. Hmm. And so even though maybe they didn't spend a lot of dramatic real estate on it, I at least felt that that was a true thing that happens. So,
yeah,
I don't know, it didn't really bother me, but...
I do want to back up to the other character that Sarah was not happy to see return, who is Jeremy. No one did anyone want this fucker back? Poor I me. Definitely did.
Certainly not under 12 pounds of beard or whatever the hell grew on him during the off season, because holy shit.
But he wasn't even that cute to begin with. I don't get the appeal of this guy. He is so poorly cast. Like, I understand the theory behind him as a character and sort of the push-pull that Rachel had with him in season one. But having him come back, especially after his last move of season one was to go to her mom's house and tattle on Rachel, like, no, fuck this guy forever. And if she has any kind of authority, I don't get why he's still has a job. Like, I feel like she would be able to make those choices. Go ahead.
And that we lost Adam and kept him, like, feels all the more hurtful, like, personally hurtful. I feel genuinely victimized by that.
Do we think that this thing with, I haven't watched episode 2 yet, is it, do we suspect that this thing with him and her mother joining forces is going to go anywhere, or does it?
They certainly keep mentioning the mother enough that I'm like, oh, she's going to be big this season. You don't see her in the first couple episodes, but she's mentioned by a lot of different characters. And there's a lot of lingering shots of like Rachel staring at those pill bottles. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. I see where this is going.
I really liked it. The one thing about the Jeremy character I'll say is that I really love the scene where Madison like has the tearful interview and goes and vomits. And then at the end, he's like, he's like, there, I'm so sorry Rachel made you do it. And she's like, no, that was amazing. Like,
yeah.
That was such a, for me, that was such an empowering moment based on, you know, in such a lesson moment for him where he's just like, oh, I understand how women behave. I understand how they think. Mm-hmm. And it just was turned on its head in that moment for him. And he's like, he's kind of scared. He doesn't understand that this woman could, you know, really feel the things genuinely in that moment and then still, you know, have the ambition and drive to produce on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if the entire season is just him getting the butt end of a bunch of lessons, then I'm fine with it. But
yeah,
I do think it's important to have. Sorry. Go ahead, Sarah.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I do think it's important to have characters who aren't entirely immoral, but I find it much more interesting coming from a character like Jay, who at least feels complex and sort of torn and is likable, which helps.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, like, the casting of Jeremy is a problem. The chemistry with Sherry Appleby, who is fucking amazing. What a comeback from Roswell.
Seriously.
Oh, God, a girl. But it's also like, it's not entirely believable that in his role on this show after this long, that person would still be such a simp. So I am actually hoping, for reasons not related to that, that they do focus more on Jay this season, because I like that actor.
Me too.
I think the idea that he has an alliance with Ruby is a super interesting direction. Like, I cannot wait to see what happens. I semi-regret binging the whole first season because now I am crazy impatient for the rest of season two.
I'm so glad that you caught up. I always thought that this was something that you would like. And I also want to give it props for, you know, sort of we were sort of glancingly referring to this in terms of like the lessons that Jeremy is learning about women is like how all of the drama arises from relationships between these characters. There's not like, other than the initial, and this may change in episode two, sounds like it does slightly from what you're saying, but like other than the initial conversation with Gary, the new network guy, who's all like, I don't know about this, and then Quinn talks him into it. Like there isn't a sort of a side business conversation that's happening where it's like, oh, there's this outside pressure, someone's trying to sell the network or any of these other kind of like
bullshit business
storylines that arise on other shows, and you're like, oh, I don't care. I mean, I think I said this on the podcast earlier, but like the same thing with the Girlfriend Experience, the show only I am watching, where they like had this other storyline where, you know, these two lawyers from opposing firms were like maybe colluding, and it's like, I don't care about that. I never cared about the business stories on the OC either. I don't care about the parents on any show. I don't care. Like, just get to the stuff.
I don't care about the Newport Group, Tara. I can't believe you.
Or Cable Town or whatever. Yes, exactly. Like, any of those stories is less interesting than, like, all of the drama that is inherent in this premise of the show. Like, just keep it on the set and the shit that goes down. Like, that's enough. And I love that this show understands that and gives it the appropriate primacy.
Ruby has promised more t-shirts, and I am here for them.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, well, any final thoughts before we move on? Other than excitement for this season and happiness that it has returned? Dave, are you going to keep watching this season?
Nope.
Okay.
Oh, really? I'm very... What a waste of Bierko. He's like such an underrated performer. And for him to be basically, you know, a bear man, it's like so disappointing to me.
No, but I mean, I wrote about this in my post that by the time this podcast goes up, it will have been published. But I love the idea of this as his new asshole thing, not only for itself, but also because how it's going to change his relationship with Quinn, for her to be playing off it and like getting, I'm sure, increasingly impatient about what horseshit it is and having to like deal with that.
I might be able to get through it if I imagine his character from The Long Kiss Goodnight survive. And this is how he's making ends meet these days.
I think we can all imagine that that would be an arc that could happen for real. Yes.
Sure.
Where's that TV show, by the way?
Oh shit, though. Guys, Hot Rachel.
Hot Rachel is my favorite running storyline so far.
That is such a great workplace thing. It seemed like such a thing that would happen. I'm so...
Well, and especially when they cut to her face every time someone says it, and she's just like, come on, guys.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Anyway.
All right. We all know that raisins are currently the official fruit of previously.tv and this podcast. And again, with this Beverly Hills 90210 edition, thanks to the deep pockets of Big Raisins. However, this is not only unjust, says the ad buyer, but also irrelevant. Previously.tv is all about TV, and fruit-wise, it is obvious who wins the real TV trophy, the humble banana.
Point one. On Sesame Street, Ernie did not have a raisin in his ear.
Yeah, hey, Ernie, do you know that you have a banana in your ear?
What was that, Bert?
Point the second on that Mitchell and Webb look, Robert Webb would have never done a funny dance dressed up as a raisin.
Well, you know, I mentioned to the executive producer that I should just get a banana and make up a funny dance and just kind of vibe it and it would be brilliant. And he said that was a really good idea.
Point number three, the raisin has no place in Shirley Ellis' song The Name Game as heard on American Horror Story Asylum.
Point the fourth. On Friends, Phoebe did not change her name to Princess Consuela Raisin Hammock.
Meet Princess Consuela Banana Hammock.
And finally, point the fifth. George Bluth Sr. never said that there's always money in the raisin stand.
There's always money in the banana stand!
No touching!
This has been Dorinda Hartman's Banana Festo. Your move, Big Raisin. It is time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara Ariana.
I'll just make this brief since Dave is going to be talking about The Americans later, which has its season four finale this week. Also returning this week, Angie Tribeca, which is, as this episode drops, will have just premiered its second season on TBS last night. Oh boy, it's so good. Once again, they sent us all 10 episodes of the season and we binged them most of last week. It's incredibly stupid, still very enjoyable. There's one more, the one thing that Dave had a problem with last season, as I recall, was the overly called out product placement gag. And there's another one of those this season, although this one made me laugh way more than the last one did.
Yeah.
Also, this season is a little more ambitious storytelling wise in that it has an arc that kind of goes through all 10 episodes and like a larger mystery that goes over all these sub mysteries. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, don't worry, it's also incredibly stupid and pays off in a really, really dumb way. All of it is great. I have to give a special shout out though to Jerry Burns.
I was going to say that. He's my favorite. Yeah.
He's as Captain Pritikin Atkins, he's especially awesome, especially given that this season he's getting ready for retirement, which means he's required to get a boat. So there's lots of references to him fixing up his boat sometime it's in his office. Anyway, Angie Tribeca on TBS. If you enjoy stupid comedy, check it out. And for my plug, I want to mention last week was 1991 week on previously.tv. So in the show notes, I will link you to our landing page for all of the fine content that we published for that week. John is going to be mentioning one of his as well. Speaking of John, over to John.
Thank you, Tara. I, too, am so excited for Angie Tribeca, but that's not what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about Archer, which I assume I'm probably the only one of this group that's still watching
it. No, we still watch. Yeah. We watch.
Oh, okay. Holy shit, you guys, they killed Archer. this season they did a noir seasonal mystery, and that's how it ended. And since the show has not been picked up yet, that could be just how it ends. And I'm kind of fine with that, honestly.
It's Magna P.I. all over again.
Well, I never got to the point with the show, like Always Sunny is a good example, where you just like, you kind of shake hands with the show and you're like, yeah, I've seen enough, you know,
right.
no offense, but that's it. I never reached that point with Archer, but especially if they do the live action movie that they're talking about starring John Hamm as Archer,
yes.
You know, I'd be fine with this ending and moving on to that. Just wanted to add also a little late edition that Animal Kingdom is premiering, I think, a week from today. And that already had Scott Speedman, which is he's like 9 on the John Nip scale. But I just found out, and Sarah Bunting is usually my
my Google alert for this, my human Google alert for this, but Sean Hadassy is also a series principal. And if Speedy is 9, Hadassy is like a 26 for me. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm learning a lot today. This is interesting.
For my plug, yes, I wrote a retrospective on the creepiest moments of the Twin Peaks then series finale, now not. It went up last week and was really fun to revisit, especially since the show will be coming back next year. So check that out, and let's move on to Joe.
Yeah. Whoops. We're not going to start over.
Fired.
I like the extra special fanfare on this because I need to talk about The Real Housewives of New York City, which is just off the chain, seems to be inadequate to describe what is happening this season. It's like every single episode is, I mean, I'm sort of in an unreal place right now, but it's like every single episode, it's like the entire fate of the series depends on this episode, because holy shit, every single one has been like jaw-droppingly, astoundingly ridiculous. Like, from, you figured like the fight at the bra fitting party would be like the thing, then you figured that like Luann getting accosted by her clearly gay Ibiza hookup at the Milan Breton fashion show, first of all, would have been it, and like no, because it was all waiting for last week at the fucking Berkshires when Bethany comes into to say that she walked into that party like full on guns blazing is also a massive understatement. And I can't quite get to the ferocity of which she went after Luann from like moment one, but it was fucking something. She called her a whore and a slut, I think like no less than 20 times for very like a very thin premise of a reason why. There was just like, never quite got into exactly why she was so mad at her, except that Luann was like making jokes about being around when Bethany invented her skinny girl margarita, and apparently like Bethany is to skinny girl the brand as like the bear in The Revenant was to its bear cubs, because like that's exactly what happened to Luann in that episode, where she was just like utterly mauled. It was absolutely crazy. After a fairly disappointing season of Beverly Hills Housewives, New York City really did rescue the franchise from itself. It's insane. So everybody go watch it. In terms of plugs, I'm still every day at decider.com. I had a fun time interviewing Lauren Ambrose from 6 Feet Under last week about some of the more notable Claire episodes of that show. It was for the 15th, I guess, anniversary of 6 Feet Under. They ran a marathon all weekend on HBO. It was pretty cool. So that was pretty fun, considering how much I was like all about Claire Fisher throughout the run of 6 Feet Under. That was a pretty fun thing to do. So
if you follow,
check it out at
I was just going to say, if you follow at Previously TV on Twitter, we tweeted that out, so you can scroll back and find that if you don't want to follow Joe Reed, I guess.
All right, Sarah.
Speaking of franchises needing to be saved from themselves, The Challenge. We've joked before, and by before I mean for the previous like 27 seasons, about the possibility that eventually this franchise is going to start literally eating its own tail and swallow itself. But we're now in the 28th season, and we are at like palliative care crisis point with the shit. Desperate attempts to infuse the cast with fresh meat via the Bloodline season last year worked okay. But they're leaning so heavily now on Are You the One, Vets?
Yeah.
A show I think I had not even heard of prior to Tej mentioning it for the first time. Never mind that it's about to start season 4.
Yeah, it's one of those shows.
Yeah. And then, like, the blood. And then, when an injury and a case of the Wimpies sent two teams home unexpectedly earlier in this season, the only replacement they could get for the second team was a team that had already gone home. Like, they've completely run out of people. Sometimes you have to give these franchises a minute to lay fallow and recover, i.e. intervention. And I don't think it's the worst idea to put this one in dry dock, possibly permanently, but maybe just so that they can, like, rack up another dozen or so 23-year-olds who are willing to come and do this for a living when Johnny Bananas, you know, dies of old age. For my plug, I am pleased to be joined on the podcast today by the other two high priests of the Order of the Shallows. Remember it by its old name as the Hottest Rankings. We ranked the round of 16 men's draw of the French Open last week. That is on my site at tomatonation.com. We will also be covering
spoiler, arf.
Yet. Yeah, it was rough.
It was grim, the Ontario up in that bitch. We'll also be ranking all of the presidents in time for the election. If you have some ideas about whom we should rank in the future, you can tweet at me at Tomato Nation or at any of the three of us. But yes, check it out. We were joined on that one by Paul Quinn and at It's Only Zach. Fine additions both, and we had a good time doing it, even though we are extremely mean, terrible people.
I got one that might be a mirror to the people that are involved.
I think they all are, but
well, okay, but this one is like really interpretive.
Okay.
And it's constellations. Yeah. Okay. I know it sounds boring at first, okay, but I bet you'd get really into it and it would really tell us a lot about you. All right. I have two things. One, briefly, I started reading this comic. It's a few years old now. It's still going, called Letter 44. And so the basic premise is there's a new president and he goes into the Oval Office and there's a letter there from the past president to 44. That's him. And he opens a letter and says, so anyways, good luck with your presidency. By the way, there's aliens in the asteroid belt. We've been trying to get Earth ready for the past few years. Have fun. And then he discovers that there's already a mission like halfway out there to try to make contact. But in the meantime, the last president, everything that's happened in the last 15 years in our history under like Obama and Bush is sort of like under this fictional former president, and basically he's getting the world ready for war, and all the conflicts and everything was just to increase the budget so he can make future weapons and all this sort of stuff. And
then,
yeah, it's really good comic. It's really interesting. It's like a little bit West Wing, a little bit Contact, a little bit Aliens, you know, and a whole lot of 2001 altogether.
Sounds like someone should turn this into a TV show.
So I looked it up, and oh, I was so excited for this to be a TV show when I saw, oh, in development, sci-fi.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Where the goal is B- at best, sci-fi. Apparently it's in development there, which means it's probably not going to be great. But check out the comic and see if you agree with me that it could have been a good TV show. Surprise me, sci-fi. Surprise me.
Maybe USA will scoop it up. It's sister network.
Maybe.
Oh, Dave, so your gentle spirit is broken.
The other thing I want... It's almost human all over again. the other thing I want to talk about is The Americans and what a great season it's been. But really the highlight of the season was Dylan Baker's description...
of and for Lassa Fever.
Yeah, Lassa Fever. For me, it's right up there with the True Detective Season 2 clip I enjoyed so much last year. Here it is.
Lassa Fever is a very undignified way to go. You basically dissolve inside, then squirt yourself out your anus in liquid form. First it's whoosh, then it's a trickle.
All right, this is a extra hot great micro, a micro.
I have a question. Since we were just talking about tennis, who would be the best tennis partner from TV? And as chance would have it, and we just heard, we actually happen to have a panel this week that is especially qualified to answer this one. John, why don't you lead us off?
I'm going to stay in the shallow end and say Raylan Givens. Not only is Tim Oliphant a pretty respectable player in real life, check my Twitter feed for video that supports this if you don't believe me. Raylan would be just the person to have on your side, and then he would use his steely gaze to intimidate opponents into giving you all the close line calls. And with the cut of most tennis shorts, he'd likely distract the opponents into playing far from their best. Joe, what do you think?
All right, if you think I'm not going to pick Brienne of Tarth with her hulking Navratilovian frame and eagerness to pounce on all volleys before they can even threaten her tennis partner, to whom she has sworn an oath to protect, you're absolutely crazy. Sarah, I know you have someone in mind for this.
Navratilovian frame, that's amazing. For your own Claudia Kodakilch joke here, John, that was just for you. I certainly do have someone in mind, and I hope you will enjoy it when my plan comes together, because my pick is Mr. T. In the event the T does not stand for tennis, one hopes that all the noisy fool pitying coming from the ad court will intimidate opponents of all shapes, sizes, and military affiliations.
I sure do have opinions, so my pick is Roger Azarian, West Beverly Hills High School tennis phenom, slash aspiring screenwriter, slash Twin Peaksy blonde objectifier, slash possible patricidal maniac, as played by a young Matthew Perry. And I seem to recall from Friends days that Perry was actually a pretty serious junior tennis player before he got into acting, so let's assume he remembers enough about the game to be able to carry my ass, because he would need to. Dave!
I'm going to go with John Hamm's character from 30 Rock. He thinks he's great at tennis because he's too handsome to be told otherwise. Because, well, here's the thing. It's a great opportunity to win a match of tennis, being a beginner myself.
Yep.
And all the time you get to look at that handsome, handsome face.
Yeah, you bastard. But I think the ultimate tennis partner is actually Megan Smith. She's Molly's favorite doubles partner on the tennis court and a birthday girl this week. Happy birthday, Megan!
All right, everybody, it is time for the canon. John Ramos, take it away.
So I don't know if you've heard of them, but there are these things called humans.
Heard of them.
Well, even if you had, Humans is perhaps a lesser known show as far as the EHD canon goes. So quickly, the premise: in London, sometime in the not too distant future, synthetic humans or synths exist. For the most part, they function as live-in maids, assistants, nannies, caregivers. They live, so to speak, to serve. But what is known only to a secret few is that there's a handful of synths with actual consciousness who constitute a very real family. With strong parallels to Battlestar Galactica, the series as a whole is an examination of human beings' responsibilities for their creation. And as you can imagine, the feelings and behavior of the different humans toward the synths run the gamut. I mentioned last year when we discussed the finale that it's a series that functions both as metaphor and imminent reality, which is why I find it so captivating. So I'm presenting Humans Season 1, Episode 4, and I'm going to take a few examples and look at them through that prism by way of showing why I think this episode is so canon-worthy. First, I'm going to take Laura, the matriarch of the central human family. Up until this episode, Laura has been jealous and suspicious of Anita, the family's new and nubile synth. These feelings have not been necessarily without reason, as Anita hasn't been completely behaving like a normal synth. But it still seems like it has more to do with Laura's own insecurities than anything else. Things start to change, though, when her daughter Maddie tells her about Anita's terrified outburst last episode. Her curiosity about synth behavior peaked. She takes a legal case involving a woman who was ejected from a play for bringing her synth to it. When Laura goes to see her, the woman gives her a thematic speech in clip one.
Alex, he doesn't have any human rights, you know that. Howard doesn't enjoy the play any more than your wristwatch. He's just better at convincing you.
I'm not a mad woman. I don't believe that Howard is a human. But I also don't believe that he is an inanimate object that I should be ashamed of having a connection with. We created these creatures. They walk and they talk and they look and they smell and they become part of our lives and families. They are as close to humans as can be, and yet still, people insist that forming a relationship with them or treating them with dignity is somehow perverse. Well, we've created a grey area, Mrs. Hawkins. We can't keep insisting that they are just gadgets. They are more than that. We have made them more than that.
Although Laura doesn't see any evidence that this woman's synth is anything special, her evolution on how she views the synths in general is a real turning point and will be one of the driving forces for the rest of the season. Moving on to Pete, a cop whose life slowly gets tangled with those of the sentient synths, he too has been jealous and suspicious of his synth. He's male and quite hot, and Pete's wife seems to like Simon the synth as much as she lacks patience for her husband. So it's not a shock when she tells him he doesn't make her happy anymore in clip two.
I don't think it's a good idea for you to be here right now. I'm sure there's places you can go.
This is mad.
I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. Don't do that. What's it said to you?
Simon has had nothing to do with this.
Yes, it does. Ever since we got that thing, this has been coming.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Jill, I'm a man. I know I'm not perfect, but that's the point. None of us are. We're not supposed to be.
So Pete's speech is, if a little on the nose, thematically resonant and is another facet of the complexities of integrating synths into a human world. And if, as Pete suspects, wife and synth are having any kind of sexual relationship, the show defers examinations of the intricacies and ethics of same in this plot line. Moving on to Maddie, she and Toby go to a party at which there is drunken loutery involving a female synth. And it does not take long before some of the young males deactivate her and plan to take her upstairs and do things, capital do, capital things, to her. At which point, Maddie steps in clip three.
Give it a rest, Jess, weird.
Help me get her upstairs. I'm having a go on it.
No, you're not doing that.
What do you care?
Do you think it's normal to drag an unconscious woman to a room and rape her? Is that standard party activity for you?
She's not a real woman.
So why are you trying to put your dick in her?
Maybe I just want to try pussy that's factory fresh for once.
You are a nasty little creep. Anything you'll be abusing tonight is your own fist.
Whether it's because she's younger, more tech-savvy, or just plain decent, Maddie is the most evolved of the main characters in her views towards synths, which makes her line about the guy abusing his fist more satisfying. And speaking of abusing things, it's time to talk about Joe. Sorry, Joe. British Joe is feeling alone and a little betrayed since Laura left the house on what seemed like a flimsy excuse. He is also thinking about Anita quite a bit this last episode and improper ways, let's say. I won't dwell on the extremely squeaky way he talks himself into releasing Anita into the grossly euphemized adult mode, but if you can get past the disgust, I think there are some important issues of consent here that are different and yet the same from those at the party. I'll let the panel hash those out if they see fit, but they do intercourse, after which Joe feels immediately, if insufficiently, gross. But if Joe is, in my opinion, is never sufficiently chastened about his actions, it's another very important event in driving the family's understanding of the synth forward. And we hear the aftermath in clip four.
How do I turn you off?
Command it.
Anita, turn off adult mode. Delete this from your records and don't mention this to anyone. I don't give you permission to mention this to anyone. Do you need to clean up or something?
Yes. May I use the bathroom?
Sure.
Well, we need something bracing to cleanse our palate after that, and who better to provide such a tonic than Niska? So Niska has already proven herself to be the avenging angel of the group, who nonetheless has adopted her own moral code. And here, things come to a head when she comes across a group of skinheads imaginably called We Are People, who are doing their own Smash Club, which is a fight club with a bunch of synths, except the poor synths aren't programmed to fight back. There's just something so viscerally upsetting about this sort of violence directed toward entities that can't even comprehend it. Shakes me to think of it. And we later learn that this particular club is hardly the only one of its kind. So it doesn't seem unfair when Niska, posing as a human who wants to join in, ends up taking the whole six bunch of people down in our final clip.
Are you ready?
I don't understand the question.
It's so satisfying to watch. And if some of the other characters have been more of a focus on the human's responsibilities toward the synths, Niska's subplot is the cautionary tale of the consequences of shirking those duties. Even beyond all the thematic stuff, there's so much to recommend the app. Niska's mic-dropping escape once the police have her surrounded, the discovery of the code that promises to reunite the family even as Hob come closer to catching them, the little bits of humor, like when Mia says hello to a skulking Laura without even looking in her direction, or the little knowing smile that Maxie gives Milliken, and something that's been referenced several times on the podcast, but for the sake of anyone new to the show, I won't mention. But I will say it's a jaw-dropping what-the-fuck moment ending that on its own could make the episode canon-worthy at the very end. But whereas the episodes that came before were a little more focused on world-building, I think this episode really gets to the heart of the issues the show wants to explore, and is such as a quintessential example of a great show at its best. So with a side note that I am looking forward to another edition of Dave Cole's Coding Complaints Quarter, I hereby submit it to the canon.
Well, let's just get it over with. Look, I understand that people that generate computer interfaces for movies and television, you know, have to speak a language, you know, that is sort of like apparent to people that are not technically minded. The swimmy code that William Hurt extracts from there's a sheet of code on the computer, and it looks like there's like air bubbles flowing through it, and that's like a program within a program. You just have to like extract the bubble code. It's like, what the extract the bubble code? Give me a fucking break. So that's the kind of stuff that bothers me. And you're right, John, it did bother me. I'll just finish up while we're here, because the end, you're right, I mean, is not only like, oh, I really honestly didn't think that she was a synth at the end.
I'm talking about Karen, who is the partner of Pete, the police officer.
Yeah, sorry. But the manner in which they reveal it, where she basically, you know, takes a giant condom sack out of her throat, you know, from her stomach through her throat, that, you know, has protected her robot innards from all the wine and food that she's been consuming all day to pass as a human. It is, she just like looks up at the ceiling, you know, the camera point of view from looking down, reaches into her throat with her mouth, with her hand, and just pulls out this like giant sack. It's so, what the fuck?
It is really unsettling.
It is really great scene. You know, I wonder how this show's gonna like stand up 5-10 years from now. Like, I really enjoyed the show. It was like our show of the summer last year when we did that. Sidebar, we should do that again this summer.
Yeah.
Curious to me, in 10 years, how many of the hot button issues they sort of hit on. You know, like, this is probably a future that's like 30-35 years down the road, I think. But, you know, we're starting to see some of the, let's say, human credits issues start now, you know, job loss. Just this week, it was in the news that Google basically put an AI shutdown bomb in their code, you know, so as they're doing stuff with big data and they're starting to create kind of like an AI net, you know, like a neural net almost, that they're trying to build in safeguards in case it ever gets out of their hands, they can basically shut it down. So like, it's starting, you know, like in earnest, like some of the actual like Star Trekian or Asimov or something like that. Like, I feel like they're finally happening in a substantive way. So I wonder, like 5-10 years, if this is going to seem just adorably quaint. Like, oh yeah, sex with robots, that's funny. You know, like, it's whereas, like, you know, like, this, meanwhile, we're living in the beginning of Terminator, where my skull was just crushed by, you know, a skeleton metal foot.
Skull, if you're lucky.
Yeah, if I'm lucky. Joe, the character in the show, is such a fucker.
Yeah.
Like,
come on,
like,
guys.
And but like, as the season progresses, like, he's not irredeemable, but he never mm-hmm. like. Well, okay, hear me out.
Depends,
like,
who you're talking
to. No. Like, I mean, yes, like, okay. Like, yeah, what I mean is, like, the way he's written, it doesn't become the uber villain, and then that's his thing.
Right.
Right? Like,
yes.
he's as there's an arc to the fallout of this, mm-hmm. whereas I think other shows would just be, well, he's the robot fucker.
Right.
Gotta fuck something, says Joe, and it's a robot. And so it's that kind of thing that I enjoy about this show.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of those character moments. You're right. This is sort of like the episode where it transitions from stage setting to issue examination, and it combines thinky bits and great little action bits. The nail gun moment is really great. All right, Tara.
Well, I covered this season, all of the season for previously.tv last summer, and so I went back and read the post that I did on this episode, and yeah, this is, when I saw which one it was, because these episodes don't have titles, so I didn't immediately remember which one it was, and I was like, oh, it's the one where Joe has sex with Anita. Oh, John. But it's obviously, I mean, I agree with all your points. This is a turning point episode, and that moment, obviously, as you can imagine, at the time sparked a lot of discussion on our forum threads, which you can still find, divided between people who thought it was pretty clear that the consent issue was unambiguous in terms of how the show viewed it versus some people in the thread who sort of felt, well, she's just a masturbatory aid and whatever. And like, well, that's fine if that's what you think. I don't think that's what the show thinks we're supposed to think. And, you know, the rest of the season sort of bears out, I feel, my position on that. That Joe is not supposed to be a character that we admire or this an action that is not a big deal. You know, it is a big deal, even if she didn't have consciousness that was currently dormant or that she had turned off or whatever. I was curious what clip you were going to have for the Jill Pete fight moment. And the thing that made me laugh that I'd forgotten about when we watched it this time was when it's like Pete is about to punch their synth. And then his wife is like, Pete, the deposit. Such a funny, very true to life.
Fit in with the argument I was trying to make, but that was a hilarious. He's like, God damn it.
And then he punches the wall.
Speaking of weird touches, before I forget.
Yeah.
The fact that to enable adult mode, he has to like crack a Nevada Man lottery ticket and scratch off like the silver stuff with his thumbnail in order to read like the special activation code words. Like, yeah. What?
Yes. And it's almost.
I know, he went to the trouble of erasing her memory, but what's he going to do with like the little like adult mode package?
The just booklet.
Like, oh, I don't know where that went.
It's also very similar to the way they activated the Winter Soldier in Captain America Civil War 2, by the way. Spoiler alert, I guess.
Very true.
There's not much more to add about the Joe Anita scene other than, what I felt at the time was that it was interesting how, as you say, John, that the way this episode reframes Laura's character in terms of her attitude toward not just Anita in particular, but toward all synth kind and to consider the larger issues of what's happening in society now that this, you know, this technology slash, you know, some form of consciousness has joined it and what humans' responsibility is, to protect this other, disadvantaged, needy, not okay, subgroup of, essentially people, and the fact that we end on Niska and her kind of radical liberationist plot line at the Smash Club, not bothering to go through the thinky thoughts because she has taken a position, and to me it's absolutely the righteous one. That's a great way to end the episode, and one of the ways that makes this such a strong submission for the canon. So good job, John. Joe, the not pervy one.
We don't know Joe hasn't had sex with a robot.
Right. We're not going to enter into this conversation. This is not going to become a series of drops for the show. I'm just going to not allow
that to happen. Beep, 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 beep. Time for another Joe update.
Another Joe robot fucking update. Yeah. The only reason I watch this show is because of you guys in this podcast. I do sometimes feel like we are the only people who I ever hear at least talking about this show, because I feel like this show didn't really get absorbed into the culture the way that other shows last summer did, certainly the way that Unreal did last summer. But I'm really glad I watched it because I really like it. I think it's, I don't know, it brings up some really interesting ideas. I think the cast is really wonderful. It's one of those shows, though, that it's tough for me to pick out 1 hour of it because that first season felt like such a hole. And
yeah, such an embroidery or a tapestry.
And the stuff stuff that I always latched on to the most fervently in season one was the stuff with William Hurt and his caregiver synth, Odie, which was so heartbreaking. And there are like big moments of that storyline in the season that aren't this episode. And so I think that's where I come down just in terms of like a canon thing of what, you know, how many other episodes from this first season would I have put ahead of this one, and whether that makes a difference in whether I should vote yes or no for this. And I'm still sort of like wrestling with that a little bit, but I mean, it's a great show and a great hour of it. And do we know if it's coming back?
Oh yeah, it's coming back. There, it's in production. Gunnar from Nashville is going to be in it. I think not until fall in the UK, maybe.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's right. If you fly to England, you'll be able to see it in the fall. But if you wait for the US broadcast, it'll be next year.
By the way,
there we go.
You could swap the titles of Unreal and Humans, and they both still work.
That's and a very and good Humans point. And Mr. Very Robot true. Also.
It was a big summer for that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I really liked it. And Sarah?
I feel pretty much exactly the way that Joe feels. This is such a wonderful show. I got sucked back into it so quickly and completely that I didn't even, like, make a header for my notes page until, like, 10 minutes into it. Because you just get pulled right in visually, structurally, writing-wise. The show is really effective and smart. And I also love the little touches that they don't overplay. It's one of those things like when she is, when Laura is questioning this woman and she's questioning the synth about how the play made him feel. And he begins describing the plot of Death of a Salesman. I feel like an American production might have underlined the fact that it was that play, and that play is about this, old man who's been like displaced from his feelings of importance in his life, his kind of going mad with his feelings of disorientation and stuff like that in his own world, and how things have changed and he can't accept it. That's such a wonderful touch that like he only gets as far as like Willie Loman has returned to his home, and then she's like, that's the plot, not feelings. It's really, it raises all these questions that John spoke about so capably, and I think it was a wonderful canon presentation, but I, like Joe, am struggling with the, like, constitutionality issues of this vote, and whether, because this is a show that is uniformly good, whether, like, why is this 1 hour... Like, you explained it, and I understand, but I'm not sure that this hour rises above the others. I mean, they're all great. So do I vote for it anyway? Or do we need a little more distance from this season? And as Dave mentioned, to see how well, like, these actual tech, this actual evolution holds up or comes to pass. Like, I just feel like it might be too recent, and also that the show, as Joe said, is kind of this, not like a monolith, but it's this kind of uniformly good block, and I'm not sure if we can distinguish 1 hour from the others in terms of it being particularly excellent and canonizable. The word now. So yeah, and like Joe, I'm not sure where I'm gonna come down on that, but it was a great presentation. I was like really happy to get to watch it again, so yay.
All right, well, think about it for the next 15 seconds or so. And let's put it to a vote. Tara Ariana.
Well, I will say absolutely yay. And for me, the reason is primarily the Joe Anita moment, for how much of a turning point it becomes for the episodes that follow and how much it informs them. And also ending on Niska kicking ass in the Smash Club. To me, those are both pivotal moments that really change the course of the story. And for me, that makes this a canon worthy episode. So yay.
Before I vote, I did want to say the one low point for me in the series is David, the bearded
the
sun
synth. Yeah.
His portrayal is so uncharismatic, such an oatmeal-y drip of a, and I don't know if that's a choice that somebody made or what, but it's like really like, it takes the energy down every time that he's in a scene. Even when he's supposed to be like angry or scheming or whatever, he always seems to be playing the same note. That said, he's not in it that much, so that's okay. David! I agree with what Tara said. I also kind of get that it's a strong series all the way through, but this is the episode that starts setting up some of the big questions. And yeah, it is a question of what, you know, are the big questions going to remain big questions through the next 10 years? I don't know. I hope I'm doing this podcast in 10 years. I hope I'm, living on top of a mountain with my death ray holding the earth hostage with my robot army. So we might never know. So I'm going to take this opportunity to vote it in. Joe.
At the risk of being reductive, needs more George and Odie. So I'm going to, with thanks for a great submission and with the acknowledgement that it's a great show, I'm going to vote no.
And Sarah.
Oh, Dave Deathray. It's really frightening. I realized that I didn't touch on that crazy cliffhanger at the end, which is amazing. There is really a lot in this episode that I think you can't argue sets it apart. So in the hope that we have bet correctly in Death Ray Dave's America, I will vote yes.
Humans, Season 1, Episode 4. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great canon by decree of Extra Hot Great and by decree of future ruler of the world, Dave Deepall.
Hey, this is Nick Reinwald Jones, host of Making the Sausage, a podcast about the inner workings of television. And this week I talked to Wendy Molyneux and Megan Lynn about what it's like when your writing partner is also your spouse or your sibling.
You are going to have to weather some ups and downs. And so having a bond that is outside of like, oh, we just enjoy writing together, yeah. Like having a friendship bond, having a marriage bond, having a family bond can be helpful because it's like, well, neither one of us is going anywhere.
I agree. I think it helps to work with someone. If you have that kind of background with them, when you get into an argument, which you're bound to do, you know how each other argues. You can get out of it faster. You can cycle past kind of any resentments about it.
I feel like we just focus all our angst on anyone outside that we can, and then we don't like cannibalize the relationship.
If you want to hear the rest of this episode and many other conversations about the nuts and bolts of making television, just head to previously.tv, click on podcasts, or subscribe to Making the Sausage on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Hope to see you soon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has their winner.
Well, the winner of the week, fittingly, since we were talking about Unreal and, you know, fake and real dating shows, is Chad of The Bachelorette. If you are watching this season, you know he is the one who, as we record this, the last episode, ate so much meat that someone else in the pool of aspiring suitors said he thought he ate the equivalent of a whole cow. Or maybe that was Stephanie who said that. Sorry. Stephanie, who wrote about it, said that he ate a whole cow's worth of cold cuts. Not only that, he also brought a piece of meat to the rose ceremony and, like, pulled it out of his pocket and started eating it at some point. What is wrong with this guy? But that's not why he's the winner of the week entirely. He's also the winner of the week because, according to New York Magazine's blog, The Cut, he has, in advance of going on the show, registered and is squatting on web domains for a bunch of people on the show, including JoJo herself. He owns joel-fletcher.com.
And stop it.
The Cut. And a bunch of other suitors, Robbie, Derek, Lucas, Dan, Chase McNary. There's a Chase McNary now, not spelled the same as Scoot McNary, so I assume they're not related. And also the JJHLane.com, which according to The Cut is the name of a former contestant shortly after Lane called him a fucking dickhead in Us Weekly. So Chad is obviously a terrible person. He's not going to win this season, and yet he's kind of already a winner for doing such a fucking underhanded, sleazy dick move. I'm
The landing page too, Tara. The landing page is just—it's him shirtless, right?
I don't know, and I don't want to know. But anyway,
I clicked through on one of those. I was just like, "Oh my god!"
Oh, it really is? Shit!
I think so. Yeah.
Oh my god! What a psycho! Anyway,
I didn't made it up.
Good job, Chad? Question mark. So that's our winner of the week.
And loser.
The loser is Dominic Purcell's face. Everyone's favorite prison breaker had what was characterized as a metal ball, fall on him during shooting. He got a broken nose. He had a head injury. A set piece dislodged and fell on his head. And he was airlifted from Marrakesh to Casablanca, which is like a whole story in and of itself. For treatment, he's expected to make a full recovery. The Instagram photo of his injuries is not actually as bad as some I've seen, i.e. Giancarlo Stanton getting the business end of a fastball to the face. But A, Dominic Purcell is being hilarious about it on Instagram, including posting when he's like full of Vicodin, which is awesome. And fortunately for him, part of his brand is looking like he's a veteran of illegal fight clubs, so it's all good. It's all about concussion protocol. We hope he will be better soon. And also, I'm a winner for discovering that apparently he's back together with Annalyn McCord from the 90210 reboot.
Whoa.
Here for that. Totally here for that. It's extremely weird and totally works for me.
Wow.
Speaking of being totally here for that, do you know what time it is? It's
totally game time.
Totally game time. All right, this is the second game time of the season with Joe on top with the only point so far. Today we are playing Right, from Nick Reinwell Jones, who you just heard from making the sausage. He
Nick,
earns
you son of a bitch.
An extra credit for his troubles. All right, we all know how this goes, so let's get right into it with Picky.
We will start with Joe.
All right, here's our order. Joe, Tara, John, Sarah. Here we go. Round one of 10. Current or past Saturday Night Live cast members who guest starred on 30 Rock, Joe.
Oh, shit. Will Forte.
Fred Armisen.
I'm totally. It's me, right?
Yes, it's Joe. Yes, John.
Ooh, sorry.
Sorry, I'm completely blanking on it. Andy Samberg. No, he never did.
He did?
Yep.
Okay.
Seth Meyers.
Rachel Dratch.
Jason Sudeikis.
Oh yeah. I'm blanking.
It's a clash of the titans. Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Yep.
Molly Shannon,
yep.
She did. Mm-hmm. Kristen Wiig.
Jerry Minor? Yeah, he was Kimmy Schmidt. Damn it.
Do right. I have to say
you,
one?
No, you got the point, but okay. What's the... give us one.
I've got two more.
All right.
Horatio Sanz,
yeah.
And Jimmy
oh,
Fallon.
Oh, yeah.
How about Chris Parnell?
Oh,
how
yeah.
How about Chris Parnell?
How about yeah. Bitch Hunter, Will Ferrell?
Will Ferrell, of course.
Will Ferrell, right.
Jan Hooks, Bill Hader.
Yep.
Rob
yep.
Riggle.
Sure.
Bobby Monahan.
Yep.
Sohan Fallon?
Soban? Siobhan Fallon.
Siobhan Fallon, yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Amy Poehler.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Meadows.
Mm-hmm.
Gilbert Godfrey.
Oh my god, yes.
A technicality wow. On Gilbert Godfrey. This is round two. Actors who have starred on one Joss Whedon show and guest starred on another as a different character.
That's really slicing it fine, Nick Reinwell Jones. All right, so that we start with John? Is that how this works?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Alan Tudyk.
Me?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, Eliza Dushku.
Shit!
Nathan Fillion.
Wait, Eliza Dushku is not on this list.
She should be, because she starred in Dollhouse, yeah. And she guested on Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
And Angel.
And Angel, and Angel.
Sorry, what was the next one?
I said Nathan Fillion.
I don't fucking know. Charisma Carpenter? That is just.
It's me?
Yep.
Alexis Denisov.
Cripes. Anthony Stewart Head.
Gina Torres.
Nice.
Was she? Oh, yeah. I don't know why I thought of her and then I dismissed it, but I had the credits run. Is it just you and me?
Yep.
Joe?
I think it is.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Stop stalling. Let's go with the answer. Chop.
Summer Glau.
God damn you. That was the one I had in the chamber. Oh, God damn it.
I have at least six here.
What was that girl's name? Oh, shit. I can't. I'm coming up empty.
Good job, John.
All right. John, you got another one? John.
No.
J. August Richards.
Nice. Oh, yeah, him.
Adam Baldwin.
Right.
Ron Glass.
Right.
Dickon Lachman? Dykin
Lachman.
Dykin Lachman.
Amy Acker.
Sure.
And yeah. Reed Diamond. Diamond is our last one. Note to anybody doing a hot potato, please put your answers in alphabetical order because this is so hard to keep up. Skipping over round three, straight to round four, HBO live action scripted series, not miniseries, that aired just one season.
Ooh.
Sarah, correct?
Ouch.
Yes, starting with Sarah DiBento.
I would really love to say Arliss, but I cannot. Oh my God. My mind is emptied of things that are on HBO. Oh, what was I fucking thinking?
Next.
Okay, yeah, I don't know.
Was it called Luck?
Damn it!
That horse killer show?
Yep, that horse killer show.
Yep.
John from Cincinnati.
Nice.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't know.
So it's just me and Joe, right?
It's me and you,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tell me you love me?
Fuck you, Joe!
Ah!
Oh, son of a bitch!
So many stuff.
Mind of the Married Man?
No, that had multiple seasons.
No, it didn't! Wow. I can't believe it. Good job, Joe.
Joe, do you have another one just to rub it in?
I don't. That was it.
Really? Wow, here's a lot of them. The Brink,
are
guys.
There?
The Brink! I couldn't remember the name
Brink.
Of it. It was in my brain.
Jonah from Tonga. Family Tree.
Yeah.
Jamie, Private School Girl.
Oh, yeah.
The Boring Life of Jacqueline, living up to its title, apparently. Angry Boys.
Mm-hmm.
The number one detective, ladies detective agency. Life's
right.
Too Short.
Right.
Unscripted. Summer Heights High, Lucky Louie.
Oh, yeah.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
The High Life, K Street with Clooney.
Street.
Right.
Hotel Room, Maximum Security, Little Britain, USA. Well, here's one to redeem everybody. HBO live action scripted series, current or past, that have aired five seasons or more.
Okay.
Woo.
Starting with me?
Sure.
All right. Sorry, Sarah. Sopranos. John.
Oh, sorry. Veep.
No. Yes. Sorry. Is it
it's in its fifth.
Series?
No. Yes, fifth it is right in now. Its fifth,
yeah.
I believe.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
Sex in the City.
Shit.
6 Feet Under.
Oh, scripted, right? Shit. Arliss?
Damn.
Damn it.
Game of Thrones.
True Blood.
God damn it. Everybody's taking the ones that I had. God. Oh. Shit. Real Time with Belmar is not scripted.
That's why
Fuck.
I said scripted.
Did Mind of the Married Man go 5?
Entourage.
Oh God. Billions. No, just kidding. Web Therapy?
Wrong network.
Wrong network.
Oh, God damn it. Oh.
Sarah?
Oz?
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit. Back to me, right?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Still quite a few.
Oh, now I have one. Jesus.
Final! Just kidding.
All right, here's some ones you missed. Sarah with the point. Boardwalk Empire.
Good job, Sarah.
How about The Wire?
The Wire.
Wait, was The Wire only 4?
No, it was 5.
Yeah, The Wire.
5, yep.
The Wire.
On technicalities, we have Fraggle Rock and Kids in the Hall.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Big Love.
Big Love.
Girls.
Yeah.
Girls.
Not necessarily the news. I have no idea what that
is.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
First and 10, Dream On, Curb Your Enthusiasm, guys.
Yeah.
And The Larry Sanders Show.
The Larry Sanders.
I couldn't think of any sicker.
Hot potato. Calling in Smooth Joey Apollo for round 6, Primetime Emmy Award nominees for Outstanding Comedy Series in the 1990s.
Oh, boy.
1990s. Whoever's turn it is, go.
Joe.
Friends.
Seinfeld.
Mad About You.
It. shit. Things that were on in the 90s. CTV. I can't think of a damn thing. I'm out.
Frasier?
I think it's Frasier, Joe. Yeah.
I should know.
You should know.
I'm Frasier.
The Larry Sanders Show.
Over 10 left.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Nice.
Spin City.
Oh my God.
What? Damn.
That seems
such
strange.
A good guess, though.
That is a good guess. I would have thought that we did for sure. Murphy Brown. Thanks, nice. 1991 week.
Oh, boy. That's the 90s. 90s that ever 90s. Yeah. I feel like this is too late, but King of Queens?
Yep. Nope. So that's Star's point. Woo. Here's some ones you missed. Squeaking in on the 90s. Cheers.
Oh, yeah.
Designing
right.
Women.
Oh, duh. Sure.
Sarah D. Bunting, a little show called Golden Girls.
Oh, no.
The
Where
Wonder Years. Brooklyn Bridge.
Ooh. Yeah, I remember that too.
Home Improvement. Sure. Third Rock from the Sun. Alec McBeal. And her last one, not mentioned, Sex and the City.
Oh,
damn. All right, guys. Same category, but drama series in the 1990s.
Starting with John.
John Ramos. Go. Primetime Emmy Award nominees for Outstanding Drama in the 90s.
Said ER.
ER.
Ooh. Not sure this came on in time. Sopranos?
Oh, wait. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
All right.
Yep.
NYPD Blue?
Chicago Hope? Phew.
Yeah.
Let's see. My so-called life.
Why can't I think of a single thing that used to be on in the 90s? I was there, or so I'm told. I don't know.
So just me and Tara?
Correct.
Law and Order.
LA Law.
Oh, that's a good one. Picket Fences.
That was on my list.
The Practice? Oh, phew.
Nice.
Nice. Wow,
on my list. The X-Files.
Oh, good one. China Beach? Phew.
Oh, God, this is getting tough. Homicide? fuck. Oh. What was left?
You got another one, Tara? Gotta rub it in.
I have some guesses. Was right. At Northern Exposure?
Yeah.
Okay, phew.
Dang, good one.
Quantum Leap.
Sure.
30-something.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Twin Peaks.
Yep.
All Fly Away.
That was on my list.
Homefront?
Yeah, that was a good show.
What was that?
It was set in the during World War II.
Yeah, okay. And lastly,
young Kyle
Star
Chandler.
Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, of course.
No. Wow.
All right, I think this is my favorite round. Round 7. Current primetime scripted broadcast network shows. All right?
Yep.
So ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CW.
Yep.
With one word titles.
Okay.
And there are quite a few.
Current.
Yep.
Current. Okay.
Starting with John Ramos.
Oh, jeepers.
Well, I hate to throw out a technicality right away, but iZombie?
Yeah, that works.
Current networks. Oh, yeah. Gotham.
Nice.
That was on my list. Arrow.
Rain.
I don't know.
This is surprisingly hard.
It is.
I can only think of what's with in them. Yeah. I don't know.
Wow. All right.
Just said scripted, right? It can be comedy or drama.
Yep.
Okay. Over to Sarah.
Blackish.
Shit.
Dang.
Sorry.
God, I hope this show is coming back. Zoo? Yeah.
It's coming back.
Oh, it's coming back.
Oh, you, yeah,
oh, it's
you
coming,
believe
right.
It.
Oh, you know it. Oh, fuck me. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, there's so many.
I know. I'm sure there are.
Like, seriously, just think about shows you watch.
I am.
Wow. I'm going to call it in a second. This is unbelievable.
Oh, God, I just thought of one.
Yeah, I'm you're so
right.
Sorry.
Wow. All right. So, Joe and Sarah.
Yep.
Damn it.
Guys.
Now I can only think of the ones.
Yes,
I know.
That's the problem.
I know it's tough in the moment, but there's so many.
I know there are.
All right, Joe.
Good job, Joe.
You got one just so, you know, watch the tape.
I had in the chamber Empire and Blind Spot.
Oh, good.
All right, guys. Here's
good
the
job,
ones
Joe.
You missed. Scandal.
Scandal!
Supergirl.
Of course.
Scorpion.
Yes.
Gallivant, which I think it might not
it's
be
canceled.
Part.
It's got canceled. Yep.
Quantico.
Yeah.
Elementary.
Yep.
Crowded. Mm. Superstore.
Mm.
Telenovela, I believe, was canceled.
Crowded was canceled, too.
Grandfathered, canceled, right?
Yep.
Limitless, canceled.
Yep.
Nashville,
Mistresses
canceled.
I just thought of, though.
Supernatural.
Will outlive us all.
Rosewood. Heartbeat. Mom. Bones. Grimm. Containment. Oh. Bordertown. Lucifer. Aquarius.
My God.
Oh, Aquarius.
All right. This is round 8. Scripted TV series or miniseries executive produced by Mr. Steven Spielberg.
Okay.
Spielberg.
Starting with me, right? Right?
Sure.
Okay. The Pacific.
I don't know why I know this, but Public Morals?
Nobody knows why you know that.
Don't know this, but let's take a guess. The American West?
Not in alphabetical order. Got to, and I don't.
Probably wrong anyway. There you go.
Band of Brothers.
Under the Dome.
Damn it. Oh,
good lord.
Why didn't I do that one first?
Oh, yay.
Wait, is Sarah still in it?
It's no. Oh, John. It's me, Johnston. I think. I'm still in, but that was my last one, so I'm out. Okay.
There are probably 24 left.
Yeah.
There's a lot. A lot of them are shit shows that you forgot.
I was going to say, he does a lot of like really crappy. Did he do like Falling Skies?
Yes.
Is that your answer?
Oh, well, yes.
It is. I guess it is now because I confirmed it. I assumed it was his answer. Extant?
Damn it. Did he. 11, 22, 63?
Yeah. All right, Tara, you got it. But
okay,
you got one?
Did he do From the Earth to the Moon? That is surprising to me, but I get it anyway.
All right, here's one. What's a recent TV show that sucked, was nearly as good as Almost Human, and was a movie that Steven Spielberg did?
Oh, Minority Report.
Minority Report.
All right, quickly, other ones. The Whisperers, Red Band Society, Lucky Seven.
Yeah.
Little show called Smash.
Sure, fuck.
Oh, right.
River.
Sorry, Adam.
The River. Terra Nova. A little show named after Tara Ariano, the United States of Tara.
Right.
Into the West. Was that what you were thinking of, sir?
Oh.
Probably.
Taken. Right. Pinky, Elmira and the Brain. Pinky and the Brain. Animaniacs. Invasion America. Toonsylvania. High Incident. Freakazoid. Sequest. Both flavors. Family Dog. Remember that?
Yeah.
Tiny Toon Adventures. Amazing Stories.
Of course.
Right.
Freaks and Geeks, The American Spin City are examples of shows that were produced by DreamWorks but had no Spielbergian influences.
Wow. All
right, last round coming up. Well, let's get them scores.
Okay, well, John and Sarah tied with one each. Joe has two. I have four.
Okay, so the game is done, but let's play round 10, which is this. TV shows created or co-created by Stephen Bochco.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Ooh. Going back in time.
Starting with John.
John. The Botch.
The Practice?
I don't think so.
No, that was DVD Kelly, time. I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say there's about 24 here.
Shit.
Wow. L.A. Law.
NYPD Blue. He says for the second time in this game.
Was he Generation Kill? Damn it!
Hill Street Blues.
Of course.
Cop Rock.
Better than me. Oh, God. Why can't I think of another botchy show right now?
I've only got one left in my brain, so if you get it, I'm toast.
There's like
there's
one really big one left, and then like a couple secondary, and then a whole bunch of shit.
Let's try Airwolf. Because I'm out.
What was your last one, Joe?
I had Murder One.
Murder One. I was going to say Murder in the First.
Murder in the First.
Wasn't right.
Nope, they're both right.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Murder One and really? Murder in the First, and also Murder 01. All right. So here's the ones that you didn't get. The big one, I'll save the big one for last.
Okay.
But apparently there was a show called Bay City Blues.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh. That was pre Hill Street Blues.
Oh,
with,
was it?
Dennis Franz. Oh, okay. That was right. That was the baseball one, Sarah.
Yeah. That's the baseball one.
Oh, okay. It wasn't like the same format, different city.
No.
That's what it sounds like. All right. Raising the Bar. Uh-huh. Over There.
Over
Blind
there,
Justice. Wow, these are so generic. Philly. City of Angels.
Oh, yeah.
Brooklyn South. Mm-hmm. Total Security.
Yeah.
Wow. a little show called Public Morals.
Right.
Don't ask me how I know that. Capital Critters.
Yeah.
Hooperman with John Ritter, right?
Yep.
Paris. Mm-hmm. Gemini Man, The Invisible Man, The Bold Ones, The New Doctors, mm-hmm. and the last one, which I think is the biggest one left, Doogie Howser, M.D. All right, Tara's won the game, but let's do our shits and giggles round. Not actually a hot potato, but here we go. Bonus point. Let's give it 3 Dave points. Tiebreaker question. First person answer wins. I'm going to let you guess as many as you want because the answer might take a little time to get to. What TV series had a 1971 episode written by Stephen Boschko and directed by Steven Spielberg?
Twilight Zone?
Nope. No.
1971. $6 Million Man?
No.
Okay.
God, I have no idea. Lou Grant?
Is your speaking voice a hint?
Maybe. It's terrible hint.
Is it Columbo?
Was that Columbo?
Yeah, it's Columbo. Maybe it was a great impression.
Tara. Award those day points Tara. To Joe. Thank you.
All right. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We got all meta for our discussion of Unreal's second season opener before learning about the power of bananas. Then going around the dial with stops at Andrew Tribeca, Archer, Twin Peaks, The Real Housewives of New York City, The Challenge, Letter 44, and Less of Fever. John successfully pitched us the fourth episode of Humans.
Heard of them.
For the canon, we crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of Game Time Hot Potato. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
the deposit,
Sarah D. Bunting,
I want those pubes out,
Joe Reed,
Bunny Dick Power,
and John Ramos.
On balls, eh?
We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Grain.
All right, listen, I don't want to see any razor burn, people, okay? Use duct tape if you have to, but I want those pubes out.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.